This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back for this special edition of PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am with a clear voice, now, no, with clear eyes or a full heart or anything like that, but definitely with a clear voice this time now that I got all my computer glitches fixed up. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by Anna Murray, who's very thankful that we don't have to go through the slogs of like connection issues. Don't you hate those days?
I'm just used to it now.
On my end or just in general?
Just something going wrong. It always seems to happen. But this is your Christmas, isn't it?
With the NCAA tournament?
With March Madness.
Well, it's crazy. You know, we're jumping right into the topic here. But because we're going to be doing a special episode. I mean, you know, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program pretty soon in the following episode as we talk about our NBA happenings. And, you know, there's been quite a few things that have gone on, bigger events that have sort of like past its expiration date in terms of sizzle. But I mean, some of them are still, you know, pretty significant that went on in the NBA. You know, you got Westbrook still going on his tear. You got Kevin Durant's knee injury. I mean, is that the biggest story of the regular season so far? The Durant knee injury against the Wizards?
Well, now it's just, yeah, I guess you could say that.
I mean, it's a big one. I mean, it might flip it to where the Warriors don't even get the one seed in the West anymore, which would possibly cause a Warriors Thunder first round, which the networks would be salivating for. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to think of some of the other things, like everybody and their grandmother's getting triple doubles now that Westbrook's on a tear. You saw that crazy sequence with Kawhi Leonard where he made a three, blocked Harden's shot, and basically single-handedly won the game for the Spurs over the Rockets. That was pretty incredible. There's been quite a few smaller things. The Bucks going on a winning streak that's a shock to me. The Bucks being able to sort of survive it.
The Bucks going on a winning streak. Just Washington getting super lucky by just restocking their bench.
They just had They just had a huge comeback against the Blazers, I think, with a buzzer beater at the end.
Yeah. Andrew Bogut's
leg broke the moment he joined the Cavaliers. I mean, I hate to laugh about it, but
he channeled his inner New Orleans Pelican, I think, in that one.
Don't talk about the Pelicans. You know, the wound is already being rubbed in. You know, I think we still won the trade.
It's one of those irrational, like, oh, well, we're going to make the playoffs. Like, well, you have no shooting guard. If you're relying on Jordan Crawford and these 10-day contracts to be your starting two, then your season is kind of a bust because you're not, you know, you're built for Memphis-style basketball, but the players don't know anything yet because you don't have time to build chemistry in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if you could have had a hypothetical, I would have been so much happier if they had just been like a few games in the playoffs, you know, and they would have been able to sort of right the ship and been able to do something and got a playoff seed. But they were 10 games under 500 and they were like two or three games back. And they just never got it going even when Cousins came in. Cousins has played well, you know, obviously. Anthony Davis had a crazy game where he had like 46 points, 21 rebounds on his birthday. 25 years old now. Can you believe he's only 25 years old?
Well, that's what happens when you become one and done. You're seasoned veterans and you're...
Yeah. And then you see 25, 26-year-old seniors in these college basketball tournaments and you're like, oh my goodness. Some of them are even good players, but they're just old, you know? Mm-hmm, are those people automatically pegged, you think, when they go to the draft? It's like, is their age because of the second contract going into the late 20s?
No, they're just, you know, a lot of those players. Well, if you're a sixth-year senior, you're already you're slotted for, you know, for Europe. And, the way the NBA is, if you're basically a sophomore now, you're damaged goods.
Well, it's terrible. Well, yeah, the worst one probably is a junior, because a junior is like, oh, well, that's a player who wanted to leave, but he never got the opportunity to, you know. But he doesn't feel like he's good enough to like prove anything his last year, so he just wants to get out of school to go play in the NBA. Those are the ones that are kind of in like the trouble spot when they're juniors in college, their third year in college, you know. Mm-hmm. But let's go ahead and just get to the meat and potatoes of our subject today, and that actually tackles, you know, the NBA. We like to put the NBA spin, of course, on any of the shows that we do. So, you know, the NCAA tournament kicks in. I'll be doing, you know, the prediction show for the March Madness for the Place to Be, you know, network of podcasts with Scott Criscolo and our buddy Logan and Matt Rotella. So you'll hear me again soon, unfortunately. But we do have, like, we do have our angle here where we like to talk about the professional prospects in the NCAA tournament. We can even tackle some of the ones that did not necessarily make it. Let's just talk about overall storylines. Was there anything, as you watched college basketball, you know, even if it was sparingly, was there anything that was just highly noticeable, like the kind of the small increase in scoring now that the shot clock's at 30 seconds and everyone's getting used to it, the Blue Bloods being really, really dominant, Gonzaga being undefeated up to the last game of the regular season? Like, was there anything that really stood out for you?
This season was pretty terrible, I think.
Okay.
It was just, you have a lot of really just high-end teams are the ones there. Like, West Virginia's in the top 10. It's like, well, they're not a good team. I don't see them.
Didn't they lose to Stephen F. Austin last year?
Yeah,
badly?
They're not. I don't see, you know, I ask this like every other week. I'm like, why should I care about this season? Like, oh, all the good teams are out West. And, you know, if Southern Methodist and Cincinnati are in the top 15, it's like, well, those teams don't really have a chance. They just have one star player and just sort of ride them. So it's like, I don't see how. I think it's just been a down year.
Do you look at it because you're an NBA fan first? Is that something where you look at it through the prism of when you watch the tournaments and, you know, they have all those, like, the avalanche of ad revenue going through it and all the sponsors and all the bells and whistles that surround the tournament now. And their new decals, which is actually pretty cool. You know, they used to do and just straight up NCAA and everything looked uniform. Now it's all kind of splurged with like March Madness and all this stuff. I actually like how it looks different now. But do you look at it through the prism of like, how good is this player going to be once the tournament's over if they go to the NBA? Is that kind of like your mindset when you watch these games, or are you just watching kids playing really, really hard, trying their best to win the game?
Well, yeah, I'm just watching because it's fun to watch because of the emotion and the, you know, that they actually
the
care.
The hardship, yes, yes.
It's, you know, it's also, there's just too, I don't want to say there's too much, but, you know, just flipping around the weekend, it's like, okay, here's the MAC semifinals. Okay,
yes.
I can watch Kent State. Okay, what's on the other channel? Oh, here's the Mountain West quarterfinals. I'm like, then it's just, like, you start watching just bad teams because they're on.
Yeah, I mean, that the last Saturday can be really – and this is from a college basketball junkie that you're talking to. But that last Saturday, Championship Saturday, can be really overwhelming. Like, it's one of those things, it's like, God, like, you got the semifinals of, like, about six or five different tournaments. You've got the finals of about, like, 20 different tournaments. And the thing I've never understood that about it is that – the great justification for the mid-majors using automatic bids, which kind of robs the best team in the regular season of a tournament appearance if they don't win the conference tournament, which is very, very likely in that scenario, is that they need the ad revenue and they need the national spotlight for these ESPN games in order to have relevance. So they just buy into keeping automatic bids. But here's what I don't understand about it, Adam. Why would that matter if you play all the games at the same time on the family of networks? Like, I don't get that.
Well,
wouldn't you want to spread them out?
That's just ESPN buying everything. And it came to the point where it's, you know, you have to put championship. I remember it used to be every championship game was on ESPN or ESPN2. Now it's like, oh, well, we got SportsCenter now coming up. Watch the finals of this tiny conference on ESPNU. It's like, well, I'm not going to go search for that channel.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know. But again, it's just, I have to sit and watch St. Bonaventure and Ohio and, you know, just watching just,
yeah,
like, remember the SEC.
Akron and Texas Southern and, like, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, well, okay, now it's, here's Alabama and Mississippi State. No, nope, don't know what. And why are they on? These guys are not good teams. And
yeah. Well, that's when, you know, the Big Ten tournament, of course, is going to play their stuff, you know, so you're going to be stuck watching a terrible terrible Big Ten game, you know, or a terrible SEC game. SEC was way down. We'll get to that later in the show. But I still love championship weekend. It's a fantastic. It's almost as fun as a tournament. But for me, the first two rounds, the first two or four days of the NCAA tournament is bliss. Like, you go down from 64 to 68 to, well, 64 is fair because you got first four on Tuesday and Wednesday. But the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, when you get from 64 to 16, that is fantastic. Like, that is breakneck, nonstop basketball.
Oh, that's all the excitement then. You know, who is this 12, you know, oh, my God, Nevada and Texas Southern, yay. Then, okay, now we're down to the Sweet 16. All right, here's Duke, all gone. Here's Villanova, yeah. Here's all the teams we expect.
Yeah, but all the blue blood seem to be very – would you consider Villanova a blue blood? Not necessarily from the color blue. That's always more of the traditional moniker. Like, would – I mean, they've always been successful even in the 1960s. Would you consider them a blue blood?
Well, they're one of the pinnacle of just guards. Their entire team was just, you know,
the moment you look at them, all you think about is guards.
It's just
guards.
The entire team is just like 6'5", 6'6" combo guards, yeah. And you know, well, like just carry Kittles all over the place.
What do you think of their pro potential? Well, let's start off with their potential as a repeat champion. You know, they were likely going to have the number one overall seed in the East region. They weren't the number one overall seed last year. They weren't even a one seed. They wound up being a two in the South, and they beat Kansas, went to the Final Four, and just went on a tear there and won the national title on a game-winning buzzer beater by Chris Jenkins, who's back with the team. Chris Jenkins not exactly like setting the world on fire, even though he had that, you know, one shining moment. But like, what do you think of their potential to repeat as a national champion?
Very good, because I think they were pretty much the only upper echelon team to sort of avoid the high drama that plagued everybody else, whether it be, you know, players suspended or bad karma or just, you know, bad recruiting, Kentucky. And, you know, with the exception of just Butler being the snake to their mongoose, Villanova just was fairly flawless.
Yeah, as Butler got him both times. The other one that always gives him trouble for some reason in the postseason tournament is Seton Hall. I don't know why. They always have trouble with Kevin Willard's Seton Hall Pirates, but Seton Hall being there too. The one I like, I mean, Isaiah Whitehead wound up having a fairly decent rookie year, you would say, right? Close?
Yes and no. He had a decent year because he's on Brooklyn and got minutes, but they're trying to play him as a point guard, and
yeah,
he's not a point guard.
Yeah, he's a looter and a riot, as I like to call him. You know, guys that are just getting stats just to gobble them up because they're on shitty teams. The only other one is Angel Delgado, just a rebounding machine. I mean, you see any potential with Delgado?
No, but, you know, what happened to our guys, Hart and...
Josh Hart is probably going to be the National Player of the Year. It's down to him and Frank Mason, the third out of Kansas. You know how that goes with the College Player of the Year. If you're the College Player of the Year and you're not a freshman, that means that you're like a second-round pick. And if you get picked in the first round, everyone's going to question it because you're probably a third- or fourth-year player. You know, so he's good defensively. He's strong. He built up his body for sure between last year and this year. Good 3-point shooter.
What happened to Brunson, Bridges, and Spellman?
Bridges is the guy that they say has the best pro prospects. Mikal Bridges. I don't want to mix him up with Miles. Long arms, good defensively, building up on offense, but he doesn't have like a type A personality. Jalen Brunson does. Brunson's a guy that likes to play on the attack, you know, off of the dribble. That's kind of his game. If he's making his shots, he's lethal because he can do both. I think Bridges has a shot, more of a shot of going higher in a draft than Hart or Brunson. Do you think any of those three will be
in
the NBA?
I think Hart will be in for the, you know, he'll get in for the senior leadership. And
I've always heard the comp for him is Danny Green. Do you kind of see the same thing?
Yeah, just a hustle guy who doesn't do one thing really that good.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but you know, overall, I don't want to say is it a bad sign that the best college basketball team doesn't have any NBA prospects whatsoever? Yeah.
Well, look at the repeat prospects last time. You know, you had Duke in the early 90s. Now, they had pros. They had Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, even the lesser guys like Cherokee Parks and Antonio Lang. Like, all those guys probably wound up having a cup of coffee in the pros at some point. And then there was Florida with Billy Donovan, where, Billy the Kid's stereotype was that he could never win the big one. Then he finally won one with Noah, Brewer, and Horford, and then they all came back and they won it the second time. You know, Jay Wright got heavily criticized all the time for Villanova not going far, and then they won that national title last year. So, you know, maybe people think that even though Ryan Archidiakono and Daniel Achefu, who are not necessarily great pro prospects either because they were seniors, they're gone. But, I mean, do you still think that they got a pretty good shot here maybe to just – at least get into the Final Four?
Yeah, they're again, it's just they're, you know, you have decent college players who will be very well in the Turkish League.
Yeah, the thing about Chris Jenkins is that he's a 6'6 small forward and he's overweight. I mean, I know he's cut some weight, but he's still overweight. And his shooting fails him sometimes. Like, he is a 3-point shooting lover. Like, that's his game. But I don't really know. I mean, will he always be known as, like, the guy? Do you think that shot will kind of hurt him? Because he'll always be known as the guy that made the game-winning shot, so no one will ever take him seriously as a pro prospect? Or do you think if you're good enough, people will...
Well, if
people,
you rely on that. If you, yeah. Like, hey, remember me? I'm that guy who did that. No, he's not. But he's just like, yeah, that was just one game, whatever. Then, you know, it comes down to just attitude and hustle and that. But the only real other, you know, we'll just stick in the Big East for now.
Yeah.
What about
yeah.
just the meteoric rise and slow cooling of Justin Patton?
Would you call it a slow cooling, though? I mean, it seems like he's kind of creeping back up the boards.
He's out of the lottery now. In the middle of the year, you saw him firmly in the top 10.
Well, do you think that had to do also with the buzz for Creighton as a team sort of cooling because of the Maurice Watson injury? Maurice Watson was their top point guard. He tore his ACL right at the start of conference play. And then the team is still good. They went to the finals of the Big East tournament against Villanova. Going to be a pretty fairly high seed. But yeah, Patton, very interesting prospect in the least, you know. I mean, do you have a decent comparison to him when you watch him?
I am not as high on him as you.
Uh-huh. That's a shock.
there are players I like. He's just...
He's 6'11", roaming center, you know,
yeah, but he's
big hands.
He's put on weight.
Oh, for sure. He's only like 200. He's like 210, 215 pounds.
He's very, it's just, you know, I don't know.
He's a redshirt freshman, though, so it's not necessarily like he's like straight out the cradle, you know, from high school. Like he took some time to like build himself up, and that's what sort of made it meteoric. He came out of nowhere because no one really knew how good he was because he didn't play at all last year. So the other one is Khyree Thomas, but Thomas to me is more of like he's 6'3". He's more of like a guard who's got the physicality to bully smaller guards in college. I don't know about the NBA though. You know.
6'3", those are just a dime a dozen. You have to be really sort of extremely special, a la, you know, a Malik Monk to sort of overcome it.
Yeah, multi-skilled, though. For Marquette, Henry Ellenson was the one that went one and done. The funny part about Marquette, and my guy Steve Willey is a huge fan of that school, is that I told him this. I said, I think your team is better this year, even though Ellenson's gone, but when I look at him in terms of the NBA, I just don't see anything here. I mean, they have this one good guard named Marcus Howard, but he's 5'11", and he's a freshman. I mean, he's not going anywhere. So, I mean, we could just kind of put that to bed. Providence, which is Justin Rosero's team, don't really see any prospects here. Their top guard was Kyron Cartwright, got a bunch of assists, but I just don't see it, you know. Chris Dunn and Ben Bentel were the ones that went to the NBA from Providence, right?
Yeah, and Bentel is sort of the cautionary tale of...
Yeah, and Dunn has struggled. I mean, he has really struggled, you know?
Yeah, he has struggled, and, you know, a lot of it's just sort of the Minnesota void that it comes with. And, you know, and then Tyus Jones, for his credit, is playing him hard. He just didn't come in and give up. And, you know, I watched some of the Golden State game last week. And it's like, okay,
the Wolves won the game, right?
Yeah, and Golden State just looked terrible. And it's like, okay, they're trying to play him together. And I could sort of see that, but neither one is sort of taking the job away from the other one. And, you know, Ben Bentel went to China after, you know, the second round pick of the Celtics then. Said, you know, he didn't want to be stuck in the D League, so he went to Indiana's D League, which was, I think, Fort Wayne, then signed the Chinese League, then got a 10-day contract with Dallas, played for 4 minutes, and didn't get a second 10-day, so
yeah,
he's just going to be, looks like he's going to bounce around for a while.
But
it's just,
But it's just good for Providence to get in. I just don't see the prospects there. It's not like they came in, they got, it's not like Patton, where Patton seemed like the team, the guy that really pushed them over the top. Like, I don't really see too many players like that. Xavier had that twosome of Trayvon Blewett and Edmund Sumner, but Sumner tore his ACL about a month ago. So there's a really good chance Sumner, because he won't be able to obviously work out in the combine, is that there's a good chance Sumner might just go back to school.
Yeah, he'll put his name in, and, you know, teams will, you know, do some medical checkups to see it, but he'll come back in. But, yeah, that was, I was just going to say, was the only real other of the Big East was Sumner and Blewett, so.
Yeah, that's the only ones I could think of, too, off the top of my head. Georgetown didn't really have any this year that I could really name. St. John's, not really. They have this guy, this guard named Shamari Pons, who I think might be interesting down the road. But let's actually kind of move a little bit backwards and go to one of the bigger conferences, and that's the ACC. It's a conference that's just always loaded. If you look at the talent pool that goes into the draft, it's usually the richest, along with sometimes most of the time it's like the Pac-12 that actually does really, really well in the NBA draft prospects and actually number of like picks that come out of conferences. But the ACC is usually number one. They have they're looking at probably, because we're doing this on Selection Sunday, they're looking at probably about 8 to 10 tournament bids. Did you think the ACC was like one of the best ever?
No, that the ACC was not. You know, it's Louisville was good. You know, you commented that they're sort of offense deficient.
Yes.
North Carolina, very good. Duke, dysfunctional. And other than that, it's just like once you start talking like, oh, well, Notre Dame made it to the final. It's like, well, we know they're not going to.
Yeah. Well, Duke is dysfunctional, but boy, they are fascinating to watch because when they're good, like you saw in the ACC tournament in Brooklyn. How close is Brooklyn to where you live anyway?
Brooklyn,
I was just curious.
In New York, and New York is a good 4 or 5 hours.
Wow, 4 hours?
Well, it's traffic.
I just assume y'all are like really close together, like neighbors, and y'all just like, hey, what you doing, New York?
No, it's distance-wise, it's not that far. It's just everything is, it's, you know, you're, you know, 10 miles outside of New York City, and that's a good hour.
Yeah, well, they're at Barclays, which is where, because I can make the kinship here for you, because Rhode Island is in the A-10. That's your team, the Rhode Island Rams. And they played in Barclays a couple of times for their conference tournament. Is that a good environment for a tournament as rich as the ACC tournament?
No, it makes no sense. It was just one of those, well, we want to get into New York City, too. And a lot of the conference, I think what is it, the Big Ten is going to be in Madison Square Garden next year?
And they moved up the regular season to finish a week early so that they can book it, because you obviously can't do it on championship week because of the Big East. So they actually gimmicked their regular season to finish a week early so that they could play it. They could do the Garden next year. Yes.
Yeah, it makes no – the Big Ten is in Washington, which is – geographically,
that made no sense. Maryland had tremendous home court advantage, even though they lost to Northwestern. But
even though Maryland's terrible. The ACC is in, you know, Brooklyn with all those New York teams they have there.
Yes.
And it's just like, well, why are they everybody going so, like, I don't know. Stay in your footprint.
But, they won the ACC tournament, but they have those moments where they look god-awful, and Grayson Allen is tripping people and being a dickhead, and, you know, Coach K had the back injury, so he sat out some games. Jeff Capel coached in his place, but they look terrible sometimes. But then there are the games where they look really good, and you're like, oh, my God, this is the most talented team in the country. We'll just start with them right off the gate. Is that a team that you would automatically peg as a team that'll win it all, or you just don't have enough trust in them?
I don't have enough trust in them because they're just dysfunctional, and in the end, good leadership teams win, and you could sort of just the way the last couple of seasons have gone. Like, once, you know, was it 2 years ago when Duke won? They sort of just phoned in last year, and this year, like, I don't see much coaching going on.
Now, they got tons of hype going into the preseason, like Kentucky 2015-level hype. Now, Kentucky 2015 met the hype, didn't finish undefeated, but almost everybody on that team went to the NBA, from, like, Willie Cauley-Stein to the Harrison Twins to Trey Lyles to Devin Booker to Karl Anthony Towns, all those people. But Duke, do you see something similar here? Like, who do you think will depart? I'm going to give you all the names here, and we'll just rattle them off.
I just give you the names, and you tell me if I'm missing any of them.
Oh, I just wanted your opinion of it, because I think I'm too deeply rooted to even give a good response. Because
I'm saying, if I can pick out, you know, these, I'm going to say six of them are going to go.
Okay, hit me with it.
Okay, Tatum will be the top one.
He's top five. He's automatic top five.
Harry Giles will battle Scalabissiere as being the worst lottery prospect ever.
He had a couple dunks.
Yeah, but he plays 7 minutes and gets three fouls.
He always plays like he's ginger, like he doesn't want to hurt himself again, which is from the history with the knee injury. He had two knee surgery operations, surgical operations. But, man, before that second knee injury, he was good. I'm telling you, he was really good. I know he's playing high school competition, but he was pretty. He was blow away good. Luke Kennard's gone.
Luke Kennard's gone, but he's not. He's just a generic shooting guard. He's not.
He's like a left-handed Devin Booker. Like he's a lefty, but he dribbles right-handed. He's good. I really like Luke Kennard. I mean, I'm a big fan of him.
Okay. Frank Jackson probably will go.
He shouldn't, but he probably will.
Bolden shouldn't go, but he'll go.
He never plays. His stock is so low, but if you're in the first round, you're gone.
It's one of those, well, I have Duke, and, you know, all it takes is just one team to fall in love with some weird athletic trait or some speciality he does. And then there's, you know, we just talk about Grayson Allen, who will just be the polarizing.
Yeah, he'll go. I think he'll go. Do you think he'll go in the first round of the draft?
Oh, yeah. He'll
6'5", you know, kind of got some stockiness to him, so he can guard people. Well, he's not a great guard, obviously. That's why he trips everybody, because he can't stand in front of him.
But, his stock is super low, and staying another year isn't gonna.
His field goal percentage is really, really bad. But when he's hot, he's really good. You know.
You know, there'll be one of those. It'll be one of those high second round picks where, you know, a senior leadership team will be like, well, we need somebody who's gonna hustle, and we'll just hope to, you know.
Yeah, really interesting team. Let's move on to North Carolina. They were the team that went to the national title game last year. Bryce Johnson and Marcus Paige were the senior leaders. They've obviously departed. Bryce Johnson's with the Clippers. Marcus Paige got picked by the Jazz, but never really played for him or played significant. He's not played any significant minutes in the NBA. But pretty much the entire team is back. They made some additions, like 7th Woods, one of their guards. Tony Bradley, who's actually been kind of shooting up the draft boards as a center. He's kind of like – I mean, I guess he's kind of in that Marvin Williams zone. Is that fair to say?
Kind of, but
– where you look at the efficiency based on the minutes, even though the minutes are limited.
I don't see anybody from, you know, North Carolina really rising up the boards. Bradley is going to be – there's a lot of just the big men who are falling down, which we'll get to a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very guard-heavy draft, so he's going to fall down further than he should for teams reaching for, like we mentioned, the Luke Kennard, and we got a lot of Kentucky
guys.
I
don't think Joel Berry's going to go pro as a junior. Like, just like you said, the guard play at the top is so good, I don't think Berry would even get in Berry would get picked.
The only one I think who has a first-round grade is probably Justin Jackson.
Yeah, he was the ACC Player of the Year. He competed with Kennard for the award. He's decent. You know, 6'8". You know, he's definitely worked on his three-point shot, which was sort of his bugaboo. But he's definitely gotten better, really athletic. I mean, a really good showcase for him was the game when North Carolina played Kentucky in Las Vegas, which was still the best game of the regular season I've seen. You know, it was a phenomenal – it was like – it was almost like a two really good college teams that decided to play an NBA-style game for 40 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It was just – it was very different. You know, it felt like a tournament game in that they were just letting it all hang out. You know, and Jackson played really well in that game. Kennedy Meeks, not really, just a big stocky guy. Isaiah Hicks is built like an Adonis, but he just doesn't his basketball IQ is very, very low. I'll just put it nicely.
Yeah, and yeah, like I said, they're just they're a great college team because they actually have the senior leadership, and with the exception of Hicks, the high IQ and just, you know, like I said, it's all not NBA prospect. It's not their year for them.
Louisville, the only one that's really gotten a lot of stock go up on him is Donovan Mitchell. 6'3" guard, gets really hot. He can score in a hurry. They relied on him when Quentin Snyder, their only point guard for Rick Pitino, got injured, and so he was playing like the two guard spot. But man, if you watch some of the games, like I think in the tournament, the ACC tournament, he went like 3-for-15 against Duke. Sometimes he has games where he craters, you know, he's like Malik Monk light. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, he's okay, but I don't think he'll come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, you know, that second round bubble, really.
Yeah, it's sort of like 2013 Louisville, who's like one of the best college teams ever. But if you look at them, they weren't really like a pro team. Like Russ Smith, you know, got his cup of coffee in the NBA, but he was much more effective college player because he was a small guard who could wiggle through the lane. Luke Hancock wasn't really a guy like that. Gorgui Dieng was the only one that wound up having any traction. Peyton Siva was their senior leader. But it wasn't like what I'm saying is that Rick Pitino's Louisville teams are sort of built on having just enough talent to get by and having a collection of it and a lot of height, so that they could press teams, but they're not like super talented, oh my God, look at all these prospects type of teams. And this is just another example of that.
Yep, and just, yeah, Louisville will always be competitive. It's just you get players who, tweeners, undersized, hard workers, second round picks.
Perfect example is Dang Adele, who's like a 6'7" point forward, but his shooting is pretty bad, and you know, he's still very, very raw, even though he's a sophomore from Australia. Anas Mahmoud is like 6'7" from Egypt. You know, you remember that comment that Pitino got a lot of flack for where he said, "I only have four white guys and an Egyptian," like, well, Anas Mahmoud was the Egyptian. So I don't know how – I don't know his prospects there. Let's just kind of move up and down here. Miami, Bruce Brown, the freshman, is pretty good.
Nobody. He's the pretty good is
– yeah.
Doesn't mean anything.
Was Sheldon McClellan more important to that team than we thought?
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like that. You know, and then the guard who we knew wasn't going to make it in the NBA because of the size, Angel Rodriguez. Like, those are the two guys from the Miami team last year when they went to the Sweet 16. I do like Bruce Brown, though. I already mentioned him. Notre Dame.
The thing is, you get way too deep into this. Like, yeah. You know, you're not going to – if we're talking – let's just move to Florida State real quick.
Yes.
If we're talking Dwayne Bacon, Jonathan Isaac, two first-round picks.
Yes.
You're not going to mention some bum from Miami who's decent.
I don't know about Bacon as a first-round pick because he's not as tall as people think. Like, I'm not sure. And he's a guy that gets very hot and cold shooting the ball, you know?
He gets hot and cold, but he's going to be one of those late first-round picks who just goes to a playoff team and –
mm-hmm.
You know, we'll have to work his way into the rotation. It's
what you think of Isaac?
He reminds me of Rashard Lewis.
Okay. Now his 3-point shooting's decent. It's not Rashard Lewis level, but
well, you know. Rashard Lewis wasn't Rashard Lewis level when he first came in either.
Yeah, it's true. He came out of high school, huh? Yeah, he was picked in the second round out of high school, by the Seattle Sonics.
Mm-hmm. And then he got that insane $120 million deal
from the Magic. Yeah, remember that. But Isaac is, man, defensively really good. He gets double. He doesn't get double doubles, but he gets double digit rebounds constantly. You know, he's just big. He's a big, tall guy. You know, 6'10", 230 pounds. He's just built like a stud.
Yeah, and I think he overachieved a lot of, you know, from a lot of people's expectations because we knew he'd be good. I just don't think he was, you know, he was top. Really, he's, I think he's the safe number four pick right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
I would, it depends on what you think of Tatum. But like, do you have Tatum in the top three?
No.
Okay, that's sort of the debate. If you wanted, would you rather Jason Tatum from Duke or Jonathan Isaac from Florida State?
Fultz, Ball, Jackson are the safe top three.
That's fair to say, yes.
Then just sort of after that, you're sort of dancing around. Well, do you want, you know, Fox, Monk? You could have Tatum in there.
Markkanen, the one that we're not going to talk about is the international prospect, Frank Ntilikina. Yeah.
Yeah, you have him and then Dennis Smith. And, you know, the only real big man out of that group is Isaac. That's why I think he's a safe number four because you can't just have – You know, you're going to have teams who need size. You can't just have everybody taking point guard.
Can you play him at the four in the NBA?
Yes.
Yes. So that's where the appeal is. You can't do that with Tatum. Tatum is a back down three. He's one of those like ISO post guys. Like he's almost built from the LeBron, like the latter LeBron mold, where it's like back down your smaller small forwards and go to work type of guy. You know.
Yeah. Sort of like I would almost say like a Danny Granger.
That's a good one. That's fairly good. I don't know if he's as good a shooter as Granger was, though. You know, Granger was lighter on his feet than Tatum. Tatum is strong. He is legit strong, you know, for a small for a guy his size. Tyler Lydon at Syracuse is the only one I see from the Orange. I don't even know if they're going to make the tournament as we do this podcast. Do you still like Lydon? He really showed well in the tournament last year when they made their Final Four run.
No, Syracuse just sort of crapped out, and then, you know, mm-hmm. Boeheim with his commentary, and
yeah.
Syracuse wasn't, you know, I didn't know I'd say they sort of miss Malachi Richardson, but.
Well, no, you miss any good player in college, Adam. I mean, it's like, those guys are, I don't want to call them indispensable, because you have to replace them every few years, but those are guys that are incredibly hard to replace, you know?
Yeah, but you know Malachi wasn't really supposed to be a go-to guy, and just you know they just you know they're a mediocre team, and the conference was you know in a down conference. But that's you know is yeah. there anyone else in the ACC
I'll go very quickly here. Virginia is just a perfect example of you took for granted Malcolm Brogdon as like a system guy, but he turned out to be actually like by far the best player. Without him, they're not so good. You know, do you still like Brogdon in Milwaukee?
Yeah, he's – well, now that Chris Middleton's there, he's sort of
– He's got kind of angling back down on the minutes, but he's – I mean, really good player. Virginia's got no – I mean, Virginia just never has pro prospects. Brogdon was just a rare example. Virginia Tech, Buzz Williams is a great coach, but I just don't see anybody there that sticks out. Jaron Blossom game is a senior. He's going to graduate from Clemson, but Clemson didn't make the tournament. I don't know where – he had high stock in the combine, but he went back to school. Now he looks like an idiot for not doing it, to be honest.
Well, he'll still be – I think he'll fall – he'll sneak into the end of the first round as well.
There's two big names to talk about. One that's not in. Their coach got fired already, Dennis Smith Jr. with NC State. Did you watch him at all?
Yeah, I watched some of the early tournaments, and
he you weren't a fan.
Good. Yeah, it was just all hype.
Mm-hmm. He's really explosive. And he's got very nice moves when he's weaving in. You know, he's coming off a knee injury as well. So, you know, he's a guy that looks tender sometimes, but man, when he's aggressive, he looks really, really good. You know, and he's an assist guy too. He's not like a two guard pretending to be a point guard. He's a legit point guard, you know. But is he like a guy that you would reach up or trade up to go get him? I'm not sure about that. Like
he's one of those players that you fall in love with and you think he's going to be better. You know, if you're out of the one and two, mm-hmm. he's sort of the player you're going to have to be like, we're going to fall in love with him. He's our Chris Paul.
Like the Magic did with Elfrid Payton, where they're like, okay, we need Elfrid Payton.
Yes, he's somebody that team is going to have to target because, you know, like we mentioned, after that you just have the combo guards, the undersized, and mm-hmm. really, you know, if. Depending upon what you think on De'Aaron Fox,
mm-hmm.
after that I think there's a really steep drop off.
Yeah, the other one is John Collins for Wake Forest. Have you checked him out at all?
No,
6'10" center.
And Is it Coach Danny Manning, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, they have a couple more years before they start being relevant again, even though, you know, they used to have that you know, a very good NBA pedigree there and getting some quality and being a tough matchup, and then all of a sudden just fell off the radar.
Well, what happened was they had Skip Prosser, who was the, you know, who was, well, Dave Odom, then Skip Prosser, but they were both really good recruiters. Like Odom got Tim Duncan, Prosser got Chris Paul. Prosser died, and the fill-in was Dino Gaudio, who you know from ESPNU, of course. And Gaudio actually got a really good recruiting class, like Al Aminu. I think Jeff Teague was on the team. They had Ish Smith. Well, they fired Gaudio, and they hired Jeff Bizdilek, who you might remember as the head coach of the Nuggets, like once upon a time. And he was so awful. Like, the team just completely retracted after that. And Danny Manning's been trying to build him up since. This is going to be their – if they make the tournament, which they likely will, it would be their first one in, like – 7 years, so good for them. But let's move on to the American Conference here. The main ones here that really made a push and are likely to make it of the only two to out of that conference is Cincinnati and SMU. You and I both like Shake Milton, the guard at SMU.
He is the best player, I want to say, in that conference, but the most...
He's the best prospect in that conference, I'll say, for sure.
I don't think he's, you know, he still has a lot to prove, and He's a great college player, but I don't see him. Mm-hmm. He's not doing much to improve his stock.
Well, they're playing him a little bit more at point guard than they used to. You know that. Some of his flaws have been a little bit exposed. He's at 13 points and 4 assists. But he still shoots 41% from the 3-point line, and he does that a lot of it off the dribble as a point guard, and that's pretty good. You know.
That isn't, you know, I believe when, you know, you mentioned Isaiah Whitehead earlier, I think, you know, Shake Milton's sort of the same path of you become that second round pick to a team that wants you and is going to sort of, you know, mold them. You know, he's a player who has upside potential.
Mm-hmm. The other
second round.
The other one who might be playing himself in as a pro prospect is a junior named Semi Ojeleye. He was originally from Duke, and he transferred, 6'8", averages 18 points a game. He also shoots over 40% from the 3-point line. Big body. We'll see there. You know, that one is to be continued. Cincinnati's pretty good. I don't really see any pro prospects. The only one that kind of I always keep my eye on is his guard that they have named Jacob Evans, you know, but he's good. The guy that really turned Cincinnati around was this big guy named Kyle Washington, who was a transfer from NC State. Really good offensive center. I don't think he's an NBA player, though. So it's just a really good, well-coached team from Mick Cronin, to be honest. And they have the offense to match their defense was really one of the other things that held them back. You know, UConn had a really bad year.
UConn was terrible, abnormally bad, abnormally yes. really terrible, and just...
I mean, Terry Larrier, who was in the Adidas camp, he tore his ACL, like, very early, I think in Maui. Jalen Adams wasn't ready for the point guard role. You know, they did make their tiny little run in the American tournament in Connecticut like they always do, but it didn't. You knew this team was bad when even they couldn't get to the finals of the American tournament and make magic happen. So, yeah, not kind of a rough go. Houston had a good year, but I don't see any prospects. Memphis crashed and burned at the end, but Dedrick Lawson, I get the sense that he'll probably go to the NBA.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, another probably should stay in.
Yes. You want to move to the Big 12 really quick?
Let's move to the Big 12 really quick. You know, Monty Morris and Iowa State has been.
Yeah, well, Iowa State won the Big 12 tournament. Kansas had a crazy upset loss against TCU, but guess why? Josh Jackson didn't play.
Yeah, gee, your best guy on your team by far is suspended, and your team loses to a woeful TCU team. No way.
With a separate legal incidents involving cars with Josh Jackson, one where it was a fight with a teammate between a teammate and a woman, the other one he backed into a car in the student parking, and he didn't leave a note or anything. Is that kind of troubling for you? Is that very, very small potatoes for Josh Jackson?
I don't think it's as ticky-tacky if they got him on that. There had to be other things that were going down. Be like, okay, look, this is...
Well, his teammate, LeGerald Fick, slapped a woman, and he was, like, considered, like, not an accomplice, but, like, you know, like a person of interest, you know?
Yeah.
So, not the best look, but... Josh Jackson's incredible. If you want a good game, a game tape of him, watch him against Kentucky and Lexington. He was the best player on the court. He's where are we putting Kansas at, or Josh Jackson? Something like 6'10", maybe.
Josh Jackson, he's 6'8".
6'8" is better. Yeah, you're right. But he's got long arms, good defensively. His 3-point shot's coming along. He attacks the rim really well. He's just one of those freshmen that picked it up. It's kind of like Jonathan Isaac that just picked it up really, really fast.
Yep, and he'll be the de facto number 3 pick after the 2-point guards. And
yeah.
Other than that, Kansas.
Well, Frank Mason, Devontae Graham were the veteran guards. You know, Mason might win Player of the Year nationally, the Naismith or the Wooden. But I don't know. Mason as an NBA prospect? I mean,
no.
I just can't see it. Like, he's 5'11". You know, he's got the game that matches college, but in the NBA, he would have to go to the D League like Yogi Ferrell did and prove it. You know, he would have to overcome some major hurdle, like mental hurdles, like that he's too small and that he's not a bulldog and all that stuff. You know, he can't rely on getting to the free throw line, and Kansas always gets home cooking in Lawrence. You know, all that stuff. Mikhailyuk, not really. You know, he's just another player to me. Carlton Bragg might actually leave Kansas, but it has nothing to do with the NBA, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and the only another just the down of the conference. There's the only really other Big 12 people I would say are Jonathan Motley
from Baylor. Yeah,
Baylor and Juwan Evans from Oklahoma State. Who you like?
Yeah, Juwan Evans is 6'1", but he's strong. Like when you watch him, he's built. You know, Brad Underwood, who was coaching at Stephen F. Austin for a few years, he was one of the guys that helped engineer that run last year. He left for Oklahoma State, and he built this really fast-paced team with Juwan Evans. They have another player named Jeffrey Carroll, who's kind of interesting. Kind of reminds me of a guy who played there before him, Markel Brown. A little taller than Brown, but like really athletic, and he sort of kind of glides to the rim all the time. Very athletic team.
I forgot to mention Jared Allen.
Jared Allen, well, that's Texas. You know, Texas isn't in the tournament. I mean, he's super duper raw. I mean, he is skinny as a string bean, but he's a big guy. I'm almost sure he's going to go into the NBA draft. I'm almost sure. You know what Motley's problem is? Scott Drew is his coach.
He went to Texas, and yeah. It's that Texas.
Yeah, he's a traditional college center NBA power forward type. But the reason why he's kind of interesting is that he can score facing the basket. He's got decent decent peripherals as a big man. He's not like a robotic type of big man. He does struggle offensively sometimes, but he does get to the free throw line a lot. West Virginia, Press Virginia. It's just. You know, it's kind of the same gimmick, Adam. Like, it's like they don't really have NBA prospects to talk about. That's why I can't really talk about them in this realm, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like if they're a top 10 team in college, it's like that's why I'm like, is this season any good? Because how are these guys number 7?
Yeah.
The 7th best team in all the land. Is Preston? No.
Monty Morris had a fabulous assist to turnover ratio career. That's like his number one gig, and he never turns the ball over. Do you really see it in the NBA for Morris? It's four year player.
Yeah, he's gonna be one of those like you sort of like where did this guy come from? He was a second round pick, and all of a sudden there was a major injury, and he's in the lineup, and he's doing decent because he has that high basketball
like a
IQ
like a Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, just make smart decisions.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Deontay Burton is athletic, but he's not. He has a tendency to just sort of disappear. I always like a player that averages more than one assist and more than one steal and more than one block per game because it shows versatility on the college level. And Burton is one of those players that does that. You know, the rest of the Iowa State team is just like, I mean, ever since Hoiberg left, you know, which has only been 2 seasons, like I felt like they've gotten progressively worse. You know, one of your players for the Boston Celtics is Abdul Nader. He was on the team last year. You know, he was actually sort of a surprise pick. Nobody expected him to get picked. So.
Yep, and that's why it just takes one team to like. All of a sudden, how did this guy get drafted? Where did he come from? And yep. Up there we go.
How's George Niang doing? And is he within Ian or is he still in the D League?
He I want to say he's on Indiana.
Yeah, it, like kind of just riding the bench there.
Yeah, it's, I don't.
Indiana,
think he's gonna...
Indiana is slowly getting it right again. If you've watched them, they seem to be playing a little bit better. You know.
Yeah, but they're still just maxed out of just mediocrity and how good they could possibly be. But
yeah, they're like,
speaking
they're
of
like...
Indiana, let's let's move to the Big Ten. And what happened to Indiana this year? Weren't they supposed to be preseason darlings?
They beat Kansas at West Point, you know, for their like their that big event, the military tip-off event. And so everybody was super high on Indiana. They had Thomas Bryant coming back. They had OG Anunoby, who is like a really intriguing athletic prospect, 6'8", and he can guard, you know, from point guard or shooting guard to the center position. But they lost to Fort Wayne, which was the first sign that something was wrong. Their guard play was incredibly unreliable because they had nobody to replace Yogi. I mean, how valuable was Yogi Ferrell for that team? My God, you know?
Yeah, who knew? And just, you know, it was, remember, you know, Thomas Bryant desperately tried to stay in the NBA. And
yeah, he tried to stay in the draft, but nobody would give him a flyer.
And then he just got worse.
Yeah, he did. I think he hurt his stock by going back to school. That's fair to say?
Well, he hurt his stock and then just, you know, as well as one of those, you know, nobody wants you. Okay, well, I guess I'll go back and improve my game.
Yeah.
You need to actually improve your game.
Anunoby is a guy who... You know, he in college, he would have been a star had he been able to really ride out the entire season. On the pro level, he doesn't have that sort of type A personality. He's not a guy that'll just suddenly emerge and be like a star, like a superstar. He's just not – that's not what he is. He's like a very nice like seventh or eighth guy that can come in and play some defense and be a bulldog. You know, but he has the athleticism to hang in there with those – with small forwards and power forwards in the NBA. So, but his knee injury, putting him on the shelf, it really made them super reliant on Bryan in the middle and James Blackmon Jr. at the guard spot. I don't think James Blackmon Jr. is a pro prospect anymore. You know?
No.
Too many knee troubles.
And just moving on.
Tom Crean wants the LSU job. Please take it. Please take it.
Well, I will take
Tom Crean.
Now that he's officially run out of Indiana because they have zero patience and...
Well, they haven't fired him yet, correct?
They're biding their time. They're going to wait till after the...
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The controversy there is that his buyout... It's like the Les Miles situation. His buyout dropped significantly, but it's in the month of July. You know, so you'd have to fire him over the summer. That's the problem.
Yep, and whenever team languishes and doesn't hire anybody, you're like, okay, something must be up here.
Oh yeah, like, well, didn't that happen with Jim Harbaugh where they didn't fire Brady Hoke for like for the longest, and they didn't say anything, but you knew why, because Jim Harbaugh was waiting for the season to finish in San Francisco so that he could take the Michigan job. So everyone knew something was going on, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I guess I hope something like that happens with LSU. I mean, who do you want LSU to get now that they have a job opening?
They could get anybody. It just, you know.
Don't take Mark Schlesinger, who got my UNO Privateers in the tournament. Please do not do that. Please.
Oh, he'll go to the mid-major that LSU takes from.
Oh, you're an asshole. You're just such an asshole.
Well, and you're not gonna fire Crean now because they're gonna make the NIT. So,
well, you know, they plucked Johnny Jones out of mid major, which was North Texas. You remember who his star player was when he got that when he got the promotion to LSU? It was, you remember Tony Mitchell?
Tony Mitchell.
Tony Mitchell, and that was like their best player, and he rode him all the way to a promotion at LSU, and he basically I'll tell you the two guys that I think are really, just to get on my soapbox for LSU, because that's my team, and Kermit Davis at Middle Tennessee State, who got back into the tournament again. That was the team that pulled off the upset against Michigan State, like probably the most stunning upset in NCAA tournament history for me when it comes to lower seed over a higher seed. That I was never more shocked than I was watching Michigan State. Would you agree, or is there another one?
No, you can take that.
Norfolk State over Missouri, 2012 maybe, is another one. The other one is Eric Musselman at Nevada. That's another one, because the reason why being that he was an assistant coach at LSU before he left at Nevada.
Well, there you just, again, you took the mid-major who's who's overachieving right now, and then or whoever, who you know, and then maybe the guy, if that falls apart, whoever is at UNC Wilmington.
Kevin Keats, who's a Rick Pitino disciple.
Yeah, so you might go cherry pick him or...
Yeah, somebody like that. Yeah,
yeah, and then the, you know, your UNO guy will be at Nevada.
Yeah, I hope not. But that's how it works. You know, it's a domino effect. Have you seen that domino effect with the just really random, with the quarterbacks now that Romo's on the market? Like, everybody is trading their quarterbacks and moving them around because they're trying to find the most valuable piece.
Well, it's all, like, rejects, and, it's, you know, oh, well, we got RG3 and Cutler and Romo and Osweiler, which nobody wants. So it's just like, and Mike Glennon, it's just like, the dominoes is just like, this is what we're reduced to, is you're fighting over these scraps.
This is the one of the only years where I think the NFL beat the NBA in terms of trade frenzy. Is that a fair way to put it?
I don't want to say it's trade frenzy. It's just everybody's, you know, the Cleveland Browns are taking the Philadelphia 76ers. Of, we want draft picks. We'll take your crap.
Yeah, and please do not talk about the Saints-Cooks trade. I just don't want to even talk about it. Can we just move on from that?
Anytime you can move okay. up 13 spots in the fourth round, you have to do it.
Well, I know why they didn't get Malcolm Butler, just to get out of the way. The Saints traded their best wide receiver, Brandon Cooks, to the Patriots for 2 cents on the dollar. They got a first-round pick. They didn't even get Malcolm Butler. Now, I didn't understand why. Well, Malcolm Butler is a restricted free agent. You can't trade a restricted free agent. I get that. But you could have tried to set it up where you could have him sign a deal with the Patriots and then immediately trade him to the Saints. We didn't even get another player. We got a first-round pick. That's what we got. We got a first-round pick, and we moved up 13 spots from the fourth round to the third round, and we gave up our best wide receiver. And we just gave a slot receiver or a speed demon slot receiver to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, but I think something had to have happened this past week where he went off and just became a prima donna or something.
There was a payout that was due on Monday of about $800,000
for
Cooks. Yeah,
there was that payout. Yeah. And if you're not going to pay him, you know, if you're not going to, down the line 2 years from now, pay him $15 million a year, then, well, might as well try to unload him now for something. But it depends what they get with this first, you know, the first round pick.
It's incredibly depressing. We got to find a way to get back to basketball here. Where were we at? We were at the Big 12, or
we were
getting
10.
Out of there. Yeah,
we mentioned
back
Mello
to
Trimble, who's
What about Caleb Swanigan? A lot of people love him for like the college basketball awards. Like he's like one of the players of the year. But like his nickname is Big. He was a huge fat kid when he was little. Now he's sort of shed some of the weight. He went to the combine and he tested well as an in terms of his size and his wingspan, but he was not, his athletic testing was bad, his agility and all that, it didn't work. It was like Dedrick Lawson. So he went back to Purdue, had a really good year at Purdue, and they won the regular season title. But as a pro prospect, what do you see with Swanigan?
Another year in college.
Oh, I think he's gone. I don't think he's back at Purdue.
I don't think there's much demand for him.
I know there isn't, but it's the same thing as Mello Trimble, who's another Big Ten guy who went back to school. You know,
he went back to school because nobody wanted him, and mm-hmm. I think Caleb Swanigan was more of to get his name out there, and I think another year will benefit him.
Yeah.
But Trimble was just like, well, I want to go. Yeah, you're really not that good. I want to go. And the same thing this year. It's like, well, you didn't really get that much better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like they were trying to hurry it up. Ethan Happ was the best, was the other top player in the conference. He plays for Wisconsin, played behind Frank the Tank Kaminsky, your favorite player, and a former Naismith Award winner. And now he's the star guy there. He's got a little bit more potential, though, than Kaminsky because he's got better footwork. And I think defensively he can face centers better. I just think he's got better defensive potential in the NBA than Kaminsky does, which is like a negative.
Yeah, I don't see much from him, and Nigel Hayes did absolutely nothing.
He cannot shoot the ball anymore. Nigel Hayes can't. Yeah.
No, and what about those freshmen from Michigan that was the
– Michigan State or Michigan?
Michigan State, I meant. What are, you know, the highly
– Miles Bridges is
that.
A lottery pick. People are going to look at his athletic testing and be like, wow. Like, he's a high flyer. And then there's Nick Ward, the center. I think he'll actually come back. Like, I don't think Nick Ward's going to go to the NBA. But Nick Ward is a guy to keep an eye on. I think he'll wind up getting drafted in the first round eventually somewhere. You know, I don't know if he's as good as Deontay Davis as a raw athlete, but I think he's more efficient than he was.
Okay. Because they had a rough early start of the
season. Oh, they were awful to start. You know, they barely beat Florida Gulf Coast on a controversial call. They lost to Northeastern. They lost to Duke and Kentucky. They kind of righted the ship in the Big Ten, but they're still kind of like treading water. They lost they had no center. There are two centers they lost to knee injuries right before the season started. Michigan, I don't really see any – like, there's one guy I like, and that's DJ Wilson as a pro prospect. 6'10", 240 pounds. He came from California, kind of little like a really bouncy guy, you know, very bouncy athlete. I don't think Michigan uses him right, to be honest with you. I think if he was in a more physical, like defensively driven team, he would show off more. But I do think he's got some potential as a pro prospect. Other than that, Zach Irvin, Derek Walton Jr., Duncan Robinson, I don't really see any of those guys being like pro prospects. What about Peter Jock at Iowa? Even though they might not make the turn.
No, he's just
a scorer.
Just another, you know, EuroLeague.
Yeah. and you're still not high on Trimble.
No, because Trimble, he just makes a lot of dumb decisions.
But he's clutch.
He is clutch, but again, you know, when you look at this in, okay, let's put on your NBA GM big boy shoes now, okay?
Uh-huh.
You're in the late first round. You lost out on all the top point guards. You know, you have PJ Dozier, Juwan Evans from Oklahoma State. You have Melo Trimble there. You have probably a couple maybe Sumner wants to put his name in. You have Aaron Holiday, a couple mm-hmm. Euro guys who, you know, you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Well, how does Melo Trimble stand out in that group?
The ability to shoot off of the dribble. That's the only thing that can really make him stand out versus some of those other guards.
From a size standpoint, do you want Melo Trimble or do you want Monte Morris?
I would rather Monte Morris. Yeah.
There you go. That's why I don't want to say I love Maryland. It's just Melo Trimble, it's one of those you fail the head-to-head competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, you just named all these people. Like, yeah, I like Trimble, but I'd rather have Evans because he's a speedy. I'd rather have, you know, Peter Yogi just said he's just
Peter
another,
Jock.
Just
yeah.
a, Jock, just another, just a shooting guard. They're just a dime a dozen.
Okay, the Pac-12 is actually a pretty digestive one because it was very, very top-heavy. I mean, they have some talent. We talked about how the Pac-12 seems to populate the draft really well, but there really wasn't like – we could just go from the bottom to the top, like Washington State, no. Arizona State, Bobby Hurley, the coach, no. Stanford was rebuilding.
Arizona State, let me just interrupt you. Did you see their rotation?
No.
They just played their starters. Like, there was one game. They played one bench guy for 1 minute, and everybody else played 40 minutes.
Yeah, they have this one guy named Oleka. Obeno Oleka or something like that. He's kind of interesting, but that's one of the starters that you're talking about that played a ton of minutes. It's a weird team. They also lost their top two their two top 100 freshmen to transfer, one of them to Kansas. So, I don't know. I hope it don't get too dicey for Bobby Hurley there at Arizona State. But Oregon State, horrible year. Let's just – Washington, fuck the other guys. Let's just talk about Markelle Fultz, okay? What did you think of Markelle Fultz?
I believe I don't want to say I buy into all the hype when everybody said he just totally looked disinterested and didn't care. The same way Ben Simmons did in conference play last year.
Yeah, his defense left a lot to be desired. I'll put it that way.
It was just one of those. I remember, you know, the story I always tell you is when I saw, Rudy Gay at UConn. It's like he was the same thing. Lamar Odom at URI was just like, yeah, they're like, I'm just here because I have to be here.
Yeah, Zach LaVine at UCLA. That was a perfect example.
They sort of just stay around the 3-point line or half court, just like, okay, just wait till the offense gets the ball back and I'll do my thing. And mm-hmm. I'm surprised how bad Washington was, but he just didn't look like he's like, yeah, I'm, you know, I've checked out.
Yeah, it's I liked him, though. I mean, it's hard to not like him. You know, he was like on the wooden watch all the way to the very end. Had a very mysterious, quote-unquote, knee problem that has saddled him for the last 2 weeks of the season when Washington had nothing to play for. Very mysterious, huh?
Yeah, strange.
he already declared for the draft, like, last night. Like, the moment they got eliminated, he declared for the draft. 25 points, like, 6 rebounds, like, 5 rebounds and 6 assists, and, like, he averages, like, a block and a steal and a half. Like, he can shoot from the three-point line. He's the whole package as a guard. I mean, is he number one with a bullet for you, or do you think – can you talk yourself into Lonzo Ball or Josh Jackson or Jonathan Knight? Could you talk yourself into
somebody will be like, oh, I like Ball better, but
– okay, let's talk about Lonzo Ball because I wouldn't call him polarizing. His dad is because he's a big-mouth asshole, but talking about him and his sons all the time. But what do you think of Lonzo Ball?
He is, you know, for me, the de facto number two guy.
I'll say this. This might get flack. I thought he was the best player in college basketball.
Well, he was because he tried.
Yeah, well, the court vision. I know the scoring isn't always there. I think that's going to be his biggest knock, that he's not, like, he's more in the Jason Kidd mold, which is, like, the comp that they use a lot for him, that he's not a guy that looks for his own points first. He looks for the best play, you know?
Yeah, and you know, we had mentioned in the beginning of the season, UCLA's fate rides on him. They'll be good if he's good.
Yeah, that's true.
And if he sucks, they suck, and... You know, it's your, you know, you also attribute UCLA's success this year to TJ Leaf. I think he's not that good, but.
Well, TJ Leaf's just way better than I thought is really the best way I can put it. You know, he actually originally committed to Arizona and changed his mind. But, I mean, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 1 block, 47% from 3 and 60% from the field. That's TJ Leaf's numbers. He's going to go to the NBA. That was the one where when we talked about people going to the NBA and whether we thought they would go or not, TJ Leaf was like the cut line where we thought, okay, now we're looking at guys that will probably stay in college for a second year. Now Leaf, has probably played his way in or convinced himself. But Ball, 15.6 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 55% from the field, 42% from 3. He's got that funky release where it comes off of his left hip. Yeah, have you seen that?
Yeah, he does a very.
That's going to get in the way. He's never going to be able to do it off the dribble from the right, like from the right side. I mean, he's going to have his like clear issues unless he completely changes his shooting form. But with a guy like Ball, I wouldn't want to change anything. That's the thing. He's like a guy where I would just tell him to just go out there and play. You know, he's just a naturally gifted type of point guard.
Yep, and the other guys, you know, Holiday and.
Aaron Holiday is like right between Justin Holiday and Drew. Like he's like right in between. Like I think he's an NBA player though.
Just not this year.
I agree. Anabogu is one of those guys that will go, but he's so raw that like no one will know what to do with him, and that's why he'll get picked in the first round. Like Thon Maker type, you know?
Really?
I think he'll go to the NBA draft. I think he will declare.
Oh, I'll probably declare, but it'll be one of those big mistakes. And...
Yeah, Chad Ford likes him. Oregon is one of these teams that's like super versatile. Now, Chris Boucher, one of their centers, 25 years old, fifth-year senior, I think, he tore his ACL in the Pac-12 tournament, which is a shame. But they're super versatile. Jordan Bell is kind of like an undersized big who can block shots. Him and Boucher together were a nightmare. They were like the top shot-blocking team in the country together. Dylan Brooks was one of the guys that came back from the combine and had a really good year. Tyler Dorsey.
This was supposed to be his year, according to you. This was supposed to be year. He'll be a top pick.
I wouldn't say top pick, but I did.
I meant top as in first round.
Yeah, but he had a good college year. You know, he when he was injured to start the season, and they played without him, Oregon was bad. Then when he came back, all of a sudden they jumped back to being elite. So you know and they're still a good team without Boucher. I wouldn't totally count. Would you count them out of the Final Four without Boucher?
They have a decent shot. They're just a senior, leadership leading team. They're not the because what's going to happen is the freshmen will start to wilt and play for themselves as usually that happens. And
Tyler Dorsey's not super reliable. You know, Dylan Ennis, Tyler's brother, he's like a fifth year senior on the team. Arizona it starts when it comes to pro prospect. Alonzo Trier was the one who had the PED suspension, and he came back late in the game. And he's pretty good. I don't know about him as an NBA prospect. Do you feel the same way?
He was supposed to be. He was supposed to be one of the top. Arizona is just the what if team.
I agree. I agree with you. Like I like Raleigh Alkins, but I'm not sure. I like Kobe and Simmons, but I'm not sure. The one sure guy is Lauri Markkanen from Finland, 6'11", 250 pounds, awesome 3-point shooter, never misses from the free throw line. He's just the guy. Like when offensively, when he's in his zone, he is a matchup nightmare. He's gonna be. Would you say top 10 or just the lottery at the
list? Oh, he'll be a top 10 because he's a stretch five. Like, I see his name just sliding down the board. It's like, well, I don't get it because his 3-point shooting is what will make him more attractive.
Yeah, 45%. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, oh, I want the next Dirk or, you know, poor man, you know, Kelly Olynyk. Well, there you go. He's just somebody who shoots threes. And, you know, again, this team would be totally different if Terrence Ferguson didn't.
If Ferguson
places.
Played, that would have been. And also Ray Smith with the knee injury, because he had the third knee injury that forced him to retire, who was a top recruit as well. So they did get snake bit quite a bit, but they survived it, and now they're at, quote unquote, full strength now. The other one was Cal, whose only pro prospect was Ivan Rabb.
Who's going to be mid first round pick. It's just he didn't improve, but he didn't get worse. And it's just sort of double
guy.
He's gonna be.
Good defensively, though. Good defensive center. You know, that sometimes you need guys like that. You know,
I think when the time comes, he's going to be compared to your boy.
Not Jang, huh?
No, Bam Adebayo.
Okay, Bam Adebayo.
I see those as similar players. And you're gonna
I am not high on Bam. I'll get to him in a sec, but I'm not high on Bam.
But I just see you're going to hear about on the
boards. Yeah,
the boards is these guys are going in for one-on-one workouts with each other for like seven teams.
Yeah,
and they're just going to be compared because they're both going to be mid first round picks, and they're both. You know, Bam is going to be, he gives you the potential to be an explosive, whereas Rams is like, yeah, he'll be steady.
Yeah. USC's got some talent. Benny Boatwright, Shemeze Metu, Jordan McLaughlin, who's a junior. DeAnthony Melton is a freshman guard. I don't know if they're even going to make the tournament. They're, right on the cut line. But I think USC, coached by Andy Enfield, who was from Florida Gulf Coast, Dunk City, that whole crew – I think they're a talented team. I don't know if they're an awesome team, but I think they can do some damage. I mean, I don't know if you've even watched them. You know,
no.
They were one of the only teams that beat UCLA this season because UCLA only had four losses. Two were to Arizona. One was to Oregon on a buzzer beater, and then USC clocked them. So, talented team. Just keep an eye on Matu and Melton. That's where I'll leave it at. Let's move on to the SEC, and guess where we have to start with the SEC.
No, let's just end with them. Let's just quickly brush through everybody else. Let's just say, okay, PJ Dozier's there sort of again.
Yeah.
For South Carolina. Moses Kingsley.
Are you trying to say there's not a lot of talent in the SEC? How dare you? How dare you?
It was Florida and Kentucky and, you know, Arkansas is safely. And I'm like, well, when did Arkansas become good? Oh, wait, they're not.
No, in terms of pro prospects, I mean, Mississippi State, Quindary Weatherspoon's good, but no, not a pro prospect. Ole Miss, no. South Carolina, Dozier's not a pro prospect. He's already proven that by playing out his college career. Sindarius Norwell is 6'5", but I think he's more of a defensive guy in the NBA. I think that's where he's going to carve his niche out, sort of Patrick Beverley style. Auburn is really, really young. None of those guys are going to go to the NBA, but you might want to keep an eye on them next year. Alabama, no, I don't see it. Avery Johnson's the head coach there. They do have a really good point guard coming in from high school named Colin Sexton that I would tell you to keep an eye on. That's a good one. Arkansas's got Moses Kingsley. That's really the top prospect out of Arkansas, you know.
And anybody from Florida? No.
Kevon Allen. That's the only guy because he's sort of a he's 6'2" is the biggest problem for him, but he's got a lot of athleticism he doesn't play the point guard though. He's 6'2", but he plays the two. But he's able to guard bigger guys. He's just got an ability to do that. Devin Robinson, okay. No, not really.
Now that we've cleared out all of that, the floor is yours.
Oh, stop it. Like you think I'm going to just splurge about Kentucky?
Yes.
Malik Monk has the potential as a shooting guard to be a superstar. Would you agree?
Yeah, he does have that Steph Curry hype train
that
sort of going for him.
Yeah. Like, my fear is that he'll be Ben McLemore. He'll be a guy that had a really good jump shot when it was going on, but he'll never figure it out. But I think Malik Monk's got that step back. He's got the jab. He's got all the moves.
Ben McLemore, I think.
Well, because McLemore in Kansas was more of the athletic jump shooter type. You know, the step back guy. You know, that's why I say that.
I would say more of a Monta Ellis, just undersized shooter, and then if your shooting sort of goes away, you can't really out athleticize guys being a 6'3".
Out athleticize, that's a good one. I got to use that. Off the dribble though, he can attack. I've seen him get some pretty ferocious dunks in the lane. He's just not he doesn't have that like go aggressiveness. De'Aaron Fox, however, does, and the reason why though is that Fox is a terrible shooter from mid-range and from three. Now, if Fox is making his jump shot, he's lethal because he attacks the rim very easily. He's got all the moves that you ask an NBA guard to have. And he's good defensively. He's a very good defensive point guard. So those are the two guys. I've really soured on Isaiah Briscoe. Really soured on him.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have.
I think he's just mismatched because Briscoe is more the veteran. So he's a sophomore, but in the Calipari one and Dunn system, that's a veteran. But they put him at the three, so he's always undersized wherever he goes. So he has to be asked to do more defensively than he's probably allotted to do. And then he tries to play like the point forward, but the thing is you already have De'Aaron Fox, so you don't have to be like a distributor at the three. You can try to be more of an attacking guard. But you know, Fox is a guy who can go off. I love Malik Monk. And then Bam Adebayo I do not like at all. Like I don't he's got the Dwight Howard body, but I don't know if he'll ever figure that out. If he does figure it out, maybe he'll be like Montrezl Harrell, like maybe that kind of player.
Now, what happened to the other highly recruited freshman that was?
Well, there was Wenyen Gabriel and Sasha Calais-Jones, but neither of them really. Like, Wenyen Gabriel plays starters minutes, but he's not. I would not consider him like a pro prospect at this stage of his career. And then Calais-Jones barely played.
But in Kentucky, can these people even come back? Is there even, you know, room for them? Or are they your replacements already?
Well, they got a pretty good crop. They actually brought in this guy who might be in the draft for this summer coming, and that's Hamadou Diallo. He was like a top player at the three. And he came in to Kentucky and enrolled early, and he practices with them, but obviously he can't play. Because he came in late. But the question is, will Diallo actually play at Kentucky, or will he just go ahead and go to the NBA draft? That's the big question, you know?
You stole my thunder.
Why?
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, well, what about the you know?
I did my homework for once, yeah.
For the NCAA team, I just have to try to keep up with you.
Well,
because you're just dropping names upon names.
Yeah.
And, you know,
have you watched Hamadou at all? At all?
No.
I mean, he's a very athletic wing. Very athletic wing. You know, here's the funny part. That's what Kentucky needs. They need a small forward, but Diallo can't play until next year. You know, they got a guy named PJ Washington coming in. They're keeping their eye on a couple other prospects that I've yet to mention. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll be able to, like, Fox is gone and Monk is gone. You know, that backcourt is going pro. You know, that's no doubt, you know.
That's safe to say, yes. And just, okay, now that we've gotten through
we got
that,
the mid-major market to go through, which is somewhat easier than the rest of it, you know.
You mean it's just Gonzaga and nobody else?
Well, Gonzaga was the team that was undefeated until the last game of the regular season. You got Nigel Williams-Goss, who came from originally from Washington. If you remember him, he played on the same team as Robert Upshaw at Washington. You know, he's like a taller point guard, pretty efficient. I don't know how good he is as like a scorer though. He's kind of slow footed. Kind of reminds me of Kyle Anderson, to be honest with you. And then there's Jonathan Williams, who was a transfer from Missouri. I don't really see that. The other transfer is Jordan Matthews, who was a guard from Cal. I don't really see the potential there. The one that everyone – and Karnowski is just a big mountain. He's got potential as like a lumberjack more than he does as an NBA player. The one that everyone liked that kind of came out of nowhere was Zach Collins. He was a McDonald's All-American freshman center, but he's really good defending the pick and roll. He's got very quick feet.
What about Killian Tilly?
From France, he's decent, but I think he'll be back in Gonzaga.
Oh, well, if he's from, you know, that's the reason I mentioned him is he could always just go back to Europe and make a ton of money.
Yeah, so I get what you're saying, like because of the international visa. Yeah.
Yeah, just declare for the draft and, I'm going to go sign a deal with PSG.
The France league is good. The French league is good. So, like, there are spots there, you know, to be had, you know, if you want the notoriety, you know, like, look, isn't one of the top ones in the upcoming draft, Jonathan Jean from France as well? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, it's Isaiah Hartenstein from Germany or France. Yeah, I can't remember which one it was from. For the other mid majors, Nevada, Cam Oliver. You and I both like him. Super duper athletic guy. Plays for Eric Musselman.
Future LSU coach.
I hope so. Then there is Malik Pope is like a running gag. Like, I don't think he'll even get like considered, you know, and San Diego State didn't even make the tournament. Wichita State, not really. I know that Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker wound up in the NBA because I love those guys, but I don't really see it with Marcus McDuffie and Landry Shamet. I think Landry Shamet might be the guy that will, or Shamet, however you say it, that's the guy that you might want to keep an eye on for the future, but I don't think he's going to go pro or anything like that. That would be if Greg Marshall leaves for Indiana, maybe. You know, do you think Greg Marshall is in a position where he should leave Wichita State?
I mean, if you're for Indiana, yeah. If you go for
what about NC State?
No.
LSU.
No.
Illinois.
No.
Missouri.
Poor Missouri.
Well, but Missouri's a really good job. It just went into the doldrums. That's all.
The thing is with the SEC is just you're going to get murdered by Florida and Kentucky anyways, and ACC, Duke, and UNC are going to destroy you.
All right, let me give you your soapbox for Rhode Island because I know they're in the mix there. Out of the eight,
I don't have a soapbox for that.
Hassan Martin's a star. Every time I watch Hassan Martin play, he's just literally bigger than everybody else. He's a big-ass dude. E.C. Matthews is a shrimp, but he's a good scorer. Jared Terrell's good. Corian Iverson is good. I mean, you're not going to give your guys any blow here on your show?
For NBA prospects?
Well, maybe Hassan Martin. I can see it.
E.C. Matthews probably has the best one, but he's, you know, going to go back in for his senior year.
And he's got the knee problem already, you know.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
It's just once you're that second round, you know, borderline second round player. Well, now you have to go against €1 million who, you know, well, we're just going to take them because they don't cost us anything. And if they develop into something, great.
Yeah, I think the NBA magic touch that VCU had is gone now that Shaka's at Texas. Like, for even in the later years, they had like Briante Weber and Troy Daniels. But I don't really see it with like Jaquan Lewis and Mo Alie-Cox.
Yeah, Mo Alie-Cox is there.
Maybe. You know. He averages over 2 blocks a game, which is impressive. That means that
he's their glue guy. Yeah. But it's just one of those, you know, it'll take a while for them to get their new identity.
St. Mary's, no. I Jock Landale had a great year as a big man, but there's no Matthew Dellavedova. There's no Patty Mills. Like, the ones that go to the NBA from St. Mary's are the bigger guards that can make threes, and I just don't see it with that. UNC Wilmington, you talked about Kevin Keats, you know, Devontae Kocic, Denzel Ingram, Chris Flemings, good players. I don't think they're, like, stars. Kent State has a very good player named Jimmy Hall. And then South Dakota State's got a really good player who's a sophomore named Mike Dom, whose nickname is the Dominator, which made me immediately like him.
But as we just, you know, as you sort of see it, this is just a very top-heavy, mm-hmm. big-name school draft.
Yeah, the one guy I wanted to mention that did not make it because he got an ankle injury and Valparaiso lost immediately was Alec Peters. That's a guy to keep an eye on. I think he'll probably get drafted. got good, very, he's got he's way better he's got way better dribbling than people think, and he's a good shooter. Like he's pretty good. I don't want to do white to white, but maybe Mike Muscala, is that like a decent comparison?
That's not a compliment if you're compared to
Muscala. So let's like I'm just looking at this list here with the NBA draft prospects, like Markelle Fultz, Ball, Josh Jackson, Jonathan Isaac, Dennis Smith Jr., Malik Monk, Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, Lauri Markkanen, De'Aaron Fox, Miles Bridges. Justin Patton will probably go pro, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ivan Rabb probably.
Yeah, and that's the thing is once you get to the, you know, oh, it's such an awesome draft. But once you get to, like, the end of the lottery, you're talking Rabb, Abadayo, Patton, TJ Leaf. It's just like, you know, Robert Williams. These are just names like, eh, well.
Yeah, Robert Williams is really interesting, though. Number 44 for A&M. He's just he's just like Marquise Chriss. He's like a dead ringer for Marquise Chriss. Like, he gets a bunch of blocks, and he's just a big, strong guy. But he's got great lateral movement. He's one of those guys where when you watch him on the screen, you're like, whoa. Kind of like Jonathan Isaac with Florida State's guys, you know, when they have those big guys in the middle and kind of covering the perimeter, and you're like, man, that's a big team right there, you know. But anybody you keep an eye on that you kind of like have like extra attention for? Maybe the Duke dudes?
No, it's just all, like I said, it's just big names, and then you have the excitement, cheer for the underdogs until – all right, we got the same big names in every other year. So
yeah, I love Ball. I love Monk. Jason Tatum's really good.
As always, don't bet on the Big Ten because the Big Ten always falls in the tournament. Like,
well, you know, they had a sneak preview this year of the selection show, which is like the first time they ever did it, where they like showed the top four seeds of each region, and no Big Ten teams were on it, and the Big Ten panicked. They were like, oh, my God, we're all going to be on the bubble if we don't have good records. And I think what's going to happen is none of them are going to get four seeds or higher, but they're all going to be, like, right in the middle. So all these teams are probably going to be in, like facing off against two seeds and three seeds in the second round. So, yeah, the Big Ten might get wiped out by the first weekend.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, I say this every year and I continue it. It's just hard to get excited with these extra four teams in. Because be like, oh, well, look at that. Syracuse is a 12 seed. They're an underdog. No, they're not an underdog. They just had a shitty season. You know, if they won three more games, which, you know, if you probably look at the scores, they probably lost a couple by one basket. Okay, if those went the other way, they would be a 6 seed. And it's just, it's hard to get excited for big name teams who just had bad years.
Yeah, I remember the first time we did this, we did the whole Kentucky show, like all Kentucky, because it was really about them. And if you looked at that team like that, that was like the entire first round of the NBA draft for the most part. Well, that was the 2015 draft. That turned out to be an excellent draft class. And then last year, I don't even remember who – I think we picked Michigan State and North Carolina, and that got blown up pretty fast, just like everybody else's bracket, thanks to Middle Tennessee State. Give me your final four. You have one?
Oh, this year let's go with I'll probably say Duke, Gonzaga – if Jackson plays, no, Kansas always chokes. Why am I Villanova, and let's say Arizona just for a
North Carolina, Duke, UCLA, and Villanova. That's my guess. That's my educated guess. To be fair, to show transparency, we're not staring at a bracket right now, so this might be totally obsolete by the time people listen to the show. But I really like UCLA. I know their defense is bad, but man, they can score like the Dickens. Like they average, I think, over 90 points a game, which is like the most for a Power Five conference school since like North Carolina when they had like Hansbrough and Wayne Ellington and Ty Lawson. Like they score like crazy with Ball at the helm. You know, it's
an interesting team. you kind of answered my point in, you know, they don't play good defense, and the NCAA tournament is awful because nobody, you know,
defense is how you get there. Like, that's, you need.
Yeah, and if you can't play defense, you're going to allow so many easy layups. You know, you're just going to let other teams back in.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And then it got exposed by Arizona again in the Pac-12 tournament for the same way. But all right, anything you want to finish up before we wrap up here?
I commend you on being under 4 hours. And
well, we clocking in like 1:30, 1:20.
Well, yeah, and a solid hour and a half on this one.
I'm trying to keep it to the nth degree. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled program. Like I said, with just a regular NBA talk. We're gonna be closer to the playoffs. I mean, it's gonna get. I think we're gonna have a little bit more stuff to talk about come crunch time as we get
closer. Well, now we're just in crunch time. We're not in super crunch time or ultimate crunch time or uber crunch time.
Yeah, whatever they call it, like super clutch or whatever they call it.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the beginning. Oh, you know, we got 20 games to go. Yeah. Well, talk to us when there's 10.
Yeah, we need to. The Memphis Grizzlies are the super crunch time guys. You know, they're the ones that if the game is close, you're in trouble. You know, but let me ask you this in the NBA. Is there one team, like, if it's in the last 5 minutes is close that you're, like, scared to death? Cleveland, maybe? Boston?
Scared that they're going to lose?
No, that they're going to take your game, that they'll take the win.
Right now it's Washington.
The Wizards? Yeah.
They're just on fire.
I gave you your total alley-oop there for Isaiah Thomas and your Celtics, and you, like, totally...
The Celtics have had a very bad West Coast run, and they just don't rebound.
Yeah, you heard Steve Kerr criticizing the traveling to the different time zones in the last... 8 days. That was the justification.
When did Golden State just become this really bitchy, complain about everything team all the
time? Yeah, I'm not even going to touch the Andre Iguodala comments. No, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. But that was very strange where they were like, oh, no, he was just playing. I'm like, no, that's kind of a serious comment to make. You know what I'm saying?
We have to try. Yeah, because you're the only team that travels. Yeah. And you're the only team that gets, you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe they just feel a little bit long-winded because of Durant being out, so they're kind of stretching the production out of the other four. But hey, guess what? You were
playing the champion.
And not only you were playing without Durant last year, and Harrison Barnes was the fifth wheel. So, like, you should be used to this, man. Maybe the pressure's getting to him. You think there's
pressure? Well, now that they're, you know. Well, it's a lot of, don't forget, you know, they were supposed to be, oh, this is going to be undefeated team. They're the super team. They're the super villains. And just, well, they're good, but we're not wowed by them.
And Cleveland's not impressing me either. I mean, look, no, there was no Kevin Love, and literally J.R. Smith just came back. So, like, Larry Sanders signed there, which was fascinating. I didn't realize he was trying to play himself back into the league, but
well, good for him.
Good. I'm great. I feel good for him. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where he was copping out on the Bucks with like a fake mental condition. Like, he had a serious problem and he addressed
it. It wasn't being lazy. It wasn't Andrew Bynum saying, I don't want to play. I don't like, it's just, look, I need to work on me. I will give up $60 million.
And he did.
I need to be, you know, I need to work on me. You know what? Good for Pete, as opposed to just, you know, play like the NFL with just like, you know, Justin Blackman for the Jaguars.
Oh, my God.
Alden Smith for the Raiders. Just, you know, you have personal problems. You know, take time off. Get yourself better.
And then there's Lowry. I don't think we even touched Lowry's injury, which is like a horrible blow for the Raptors. You know, it's so I think your Celtics are a little bit lucky here. Like, they're just skirting by on some of these injuries from all the other teams, you know.
They're also being injuries as Horford's been out for a few games.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call it a death blow because these are regular season injuries. But, like, the ones that really, really hurt you, you know. They haven't had that yet.
Well, we'll get into this in future episodes. For now, these are the NBA prospects of the future.
I have to whet your appetite with some NBA before we can, because I know the college game sometimes leaves a sour taste in your mouth, like it does for a lot of people. Like, NBA basketball fans watch college games and they're like, "Oh, this is shit. Like, these are bad games." You know what I'm saying?
That's the problem. It's been, like I said, it was a bad season all around. And once it comes down to crunch time, players, you have to, you know, run your sets, execute. They can't even do that and just run off the clock and then do a horrible 25-foot fadeaway because you don't know what to do.
And even with the 30-second shot clock trying to hurry up the offense, it just creates worser possessions every now and then because you can't run the stuff quicker, you know. And the coaches are so, like, they just have that dictator like control over the possessions. They're like, I want to call the timeout, and I want to like it's like they're so. I just don't think college coaches really know what they're doing sometimes. To be totally honest with you, just like NBA coaches. Like I think NBA coaches don't get enough credit, and I think college coaches get too much credit. To be fair.
Well, college coaches want to orchestrate the play. NBA coaches sometimes just you. Okay, here's the play, but then you know in the end, you know, Melo will shoot it with 3 seconds to go, or DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, like I don't think Billy Donovan suddenly became a terrible defensive coach at Oklahoma City. It's just like that's the team you have, you know.
That's the team you have. Okay, let's just give it to Westbrook.
Yep.
I'll drop a play.
Thank you.
Here's you'll get to Westbrook with 8 seconds to go, and then
like because if you watch the Thunder and you watch Billy Donovan's floor teams, very different, very different. You know, but I mean, look at Hoiberg. I mean, if you knew nothing about Iowa State and you looked at Fred Hoiberg, you're like, God, this guy can't coach offense. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, but all right, and that's going to be wrapping it up on behalf of Adam Murray. This is Andrew Reese for this NCAA team version of the NBA team podcast. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you really soon.